apprenticing or interning, and that's what intern is, by the way, is an apprentice. If you go down to the local hospital and ask what they're doing when they're in an intern program in surgery, they're going to say that they're apprenticing in surgery. They are learning to do surgery by observing surgery being done. And you're going to be learning how to minister by observing ministry being done. Now, let's relate that to the Lord just for a moment. I was thinking earlier this morning a little bit about this in terms of his ministry style. There may have been a well thought out, step-by-step plan which was apparent to the Lord and not apparent to the reader of the New Testament. Not in terms of his philosophy, that's obvious once you see it. And it's not obvious for a lot of people, they apparently haven't seen it yet, but I mean the philosophy's there. But what he was teaching was in no sense a predictable curriculum. If anybody knew what it was he was about, nobody knew it but him, because he sure never explained it any time. What I'm trying to say is, it is my best understanding that Jesus was depending upon the Father to create the curriculum. All he was doing was being obedient to the Father day to day in his humanity. And the Father knew the needs of the 12 and the 70 and the 120 and the 500 and so forth. And so it is that as Jesus was dependent and obedient to the Father, the curriculum issued forth through his life just in living it. So that whatever the disciples were to be learning, they did in fact learn by simply being in the right place at the right time with him as he did it. See how simple that is? Now, that's simple, but one thing is important to make it work: obedience. If Jesus had not been obedient to the Father, then the trainees would not have been privileged to learn what they needed. So there's a tremendous responsibility on the disciplor in a discipling relationship just to be obedient to the Father. Because if you're asking somebody to travel with you and sort of be an Elisha to an Elijah, which is what this whole program is designed to be and what you're going to go do in local churches and ministries throughout your life, it is incumbent upon you to be absolutely in tune with, seeking to be obedient to and sensitive to the leading of God. Otherwise, the people that you're interning or discipling will learn good things, all right, but not what they needed. Are you sort of following what I'm saying? Now, you say, well, Billy, what about all this written curriculum that we have? That's for beginning stages of discipleship. The less mature the Timothy, the more structured the relationship. That's been one of our basic principles for many years now. And it's still as valid today as it was the first day we used it. The less mature the Timothy, the more structured the relationship. Yes, a new Christian does need a one-on-one chart. And yes, the discipler who's not trained anybody needs a leader's guide, needs a discipler's aid of some sort to instruct them and help them to do a good job of anticipating the needs of a new Christian. And then as a Christian grows, yes, character development, Bible study skills, vision need to be developed. By the time you get to seminary, and by the time you are already at the point in life where each one of you is, your needs are much, much more theoretical, in some sense of the word, than the people that you're going to be teaching to use the materials which we've developed as a ministry, both in the youth and adult divisions. Consequently, I remind you of the fact that you are not being taught a system. You're being taught how to teach systems, but you're not being taught a system. Okay? Secondly, there is no curriculum that is in my design or Sam's design or Billy's design or any of us here that says on week one our interns will go through this kind of experience and by the end of 6 months they'll have gone through this kind of experience. Now I know that the Father knows what you're going to go through, and that's why he brought you here, and that's why the plan is going to be established. I've committed this work of discipling you to the Lord, and I know it's going to be established. It's been established nearly 30 times already, and God is faithful to do it. You are to commit your work of being a disciple or a trainee to the Lord, and the work will be established. It takes both of us committed. But it's in the mind of the Father what you're going to gain while you're here. Now, to me, that's tremendously thrilling. But to some people, that's very, very frightening, even intimidating. Now, basically, you learn by doing. And since Jesus had no textbooks, no pencils and pads of paper, no Bibles. I mean, if you just take a look at the way he had to do it, his life was the book. His life was the curriculum. His life was the teacher. And the practicality of life was the schoolroom. That was the classroom where it all happened. Now, let me give you a little look backwards. Years ago, when the Lord led us to establish a discipleship curriculum, it started at West Texas Ranch for Christ in weekends for laymen, lay retreats. People came out there, little groups of people, not a lot of people, but 10, 20, 30 people. Then their lives began to be affected by the message significantly, and they began to say, wow, we wish other people could learn these principles for ministry and living the Christian life. So we thought, well, you can't bring the whole world to the ranch. We better take the ranch to the world. So that's when we began to take the message out to churches. First church that we ever did it in any structured way at all was First Baptist Church of Amarillo, Texas. And God so wonderfully used that particular week that many other churches contacted us spontaneously as a result of the ministry there. I might add that there were 56 baptisms on the weekend after the First Christian Discipleship Seminar. So those who say that discipleship does not relate to evangelism simply are not practicing discipleship with the fervor and the emphasis of that would make evangelism happen. There is no dichotomy between these two disciplines. One is incumbent upon the other. One is necessary for the other. We went to 56 different cities and churches doing those seminars during those early 2 or 3 years after the meeting in Amarillo. Pastors began to want to know how to share this vision with their laymen. Denominational leaders began to want to have their pastors trained. And so in about 7 or 8 different state conventions, we began to share the vision of discipleship through the structure of the denomination, and then finally through other denominations, and the multiplication began to occur. And within a few years, about 60,000 adults had been through how to do that, how to be involved in either discipling a person at follow-up level or at an advanced level. And I'm sure that some of the 60,000, because we had to go by materials, some of those people obviously were the trainees, not the trainors. So I don't know how many were in each category. But that gives you a little bit of history. Now, how did we disciple people in this organization? As you know, I have a deep commitment to man-to-man because I believe Jesus had a deep commitment to man-to-man. I know for a fact Paul had a deep commitment to man-to-man. And the only reason I'm committed to it is because it works and because it's the biblical pattern of the New Testament. Number two, I believe that time is running out. I know that we're not winning a lot of people to Christ, and I feel that part of the reason, probably the primary reason, is not because of theology, but because of methodology. I don't basically believe that people are uncommitted today as compared with last century. I do believe that our methodology is weak. And it may be that when you use the right methodology, you have an excitement and a contagiousness that develops, whereby the method itself engenders a spirit of passion and excitement because you see people changing before your very eyes. And that does, you know, light your fire. That gets you wanting to share more. So when the methodology of apprenticeship and multiplication are reintroduced in a congregation, you see something dynamic begin to happen. There is an excitement factor that begins to grow. And evangelism is a result. So, the commitment to man-to-man, philosophically, is mirrored in the intern program. But I realized that there was no way that I could work with more than maybe one or two people per year, max. And at the level of commitment of your time, because of the fact you're a seminary student, and not somebody that I could travel with like Paul traveled with Timothy. Well, Paul traveled with Timothy for a long time, but it was intensive training. It is not practical to try to do that. You would have to drop out of school for a year in order to do that. And that has some difficulties. I have encouraged those who felt that they could to plan to maybe drop out a semester and just actually travel with me all the time, every place I go. And, you know, intensively. Some can do that, some cannot. But the idea is that if I can take a 3 to 5 year period and try to walk with a person, I know that they're going to be gaining through the ministry activities in their own local churches on the weekends. 2 weekends out of 4, we reserve the right to say, we want you to go do this because we want you to learn this or we want you to do this. And you'll learn by doing. We don't always use 2 weekends out of 4, but we want that prerogative. But what I'd really love to see happen is to see iron sharpening iron, to see you encouraging and helping each other within the context of those who are trainees, number one. Number two, to learn from the other staff members and to let their lives rub off on yours. And then periodically, I will reach into your schedule when the Lord tells me to and when you're available, and those usually go together perfectly, but so that we can travel together or we can go minister together. Now, I don't always have a lot of advance notice when that's going to happen, and therefore, your flexibility is important in terms of our being able to make this work right. Secondly, I like to take one person per year and make them my major project. And typically, I'll let you be here a year or two before I do that because I get to know you. I find out what your personality is like, where your strengths are, what your spiritual gifts are, what some of your weaknesses are, and then what your plans are. You know, what is your vision so I can help you get there? This is not a job, must never, ever be construed to be employment or a job. lest you totally misunderstand why you're here. This is strictly training, and it's to teach you to be responsible. And boy, let me just underline that. The world is looking for responsible people. A church or an organization that needs you in the future does not need you unless you are responsible. That's the primary thing. And responsible, of course, deals with morality and character too. But responsible before God for the kind of person that you are. And I would say being responsible is, if you want an example of it, just look at the end of that table right down there. One of the most responsible men I've ever met. And you're going to learn from the different men different things as you move along through this intern training program. Now, I'd say the other thing that I'd like for you to come out with is a clear, definable vision for your life, so that you're not at the whim of circumstances, but circumstances obey you, because you're going to twist them and mold them to fit your life's objective rather than their twisting and molding you to fit whatever happens to be the circumstance that happens to be just coming along at the time. So responsible, then having a clear, definable vision for your life, and that would have to do with the Great Commission, of course. And thirdly, I would like for you to come out with tremendous joy, to be a happy, excited person who's fun to be around and who is winsome, somebody that attracts people to Christ because of the way you're living your life. Now, that should sound pretty natural, but I want to tell you, there's a lot of people that come out of seminary that are driving people away rather than attracting them to the gospel. And it's not because of the seminary, it's because of what they didn't get. That's not an emphasis in academia. Some professors are going to model it beautifully. But as far as the overarching process, if you said, what do you want a student to look like when you come out of this college or seminary? Colleges and seminaries are not typically saying, I want a person who's excited about life, can hardly wait to get up in the morning, has an enthusiasm about the way they live it, and has a contagiousness for Christ that draws people into the kingdom. But I want to tell you something. You think about Jesus and see if that isn't the picture that you get out of the New Testament. You cannot offer somebody abundant life if you don't have it. And when he said, I am come that they might have life and have it more abundantly, he had something to give. And that abundant life was what he was offering. So those are things that to me are critical to the success of this intern program. If that doesn't happen in your life, as a result of being here, then it means that some of us, especially me, is doing something wrong. You know, because that's the product that we're looking for and that God has told me that He's looking for from His Word. Now, one last thing, and I think this would go without saying, but in these days it needs to be said repeatedly. You are going to be carrying out your mission against tremendous adversity. And the biggest adversity, oh, there's two of them. One is mediocrity and the other is impurity. Mediocrity and impurity will be the two things that you'll battle against all your life. And we like to do everything we can, both by modeling and by encouraging and by exhorting, to try to get every last one of you and us on the staff to consistently be strong in those areas. No impurity in our thought life. No inconsistency in terms of morality. Pure lips, pure thoughts, pure motives. And then number two, people that are just totally unwilling to be mediocre. Just unwilling. Now that goes along with being responsible, of course. You'll end up talking about it, discussing it, verbalizing it, but not becoming it unless you commit yourself to it. That's why I'm so drawn to this passage in terms of discipleship. Commit your works to the Lord, and your plans will be established.
So those are the spiritual goals as I see it. And I would like to just, in a practical note, as we end this first session together, to say thank you for the hard work that's already being done. And I mentioned Dale bearing responsibility this summer. Clay bore a great deal on the physical end of things out at the ranch. And Mel, the most probably of anybody. Mel really worked hard. And he's not here this morning, but I want him to listen to our tape. And what we're going to be doing, I'm going to have Jay working on a project that I think will have a lifelong positive impact on him. After Jay has done this for a few months and I feel that the time is right, I'll switch him off of that onto something else and switch one of you probably onto this one, onto this task. But I'm having him spend 10 hours a week doing library research at the seminary on sermon text for the new radio programs that we're considering seriously doing on a daily basis. Joel Gregory has offered his assistant to teach our interns how to do that. And that's getting the best there is, in my way of thinking, in the world, in the country at least. So I'm delighted that Jay's going to have this fantastic opportunity. And he'll be living in the Word, drinking it in, thinking about illustrating each point. And then I'll be giving him text to illustrate. The next time we meet together, I'll talk to you about the radio program because I want you in on its inception to watch what happens, why, how decisions are made, if we do it or do not do it, because that decision's not been made yet. And how we go about discerning, is it God's will for us to do this? Why? Well, hopefully, by watching the process of decision-making and development, if there's anything to develop, you'll learn how to do those, you know, same kind of things later for some ministry God calls you to do. And then the next time we get together, I'll try to share with you about the background, the history, and what's happening in terms of another really, really exciting project at West Texas Ranch for Christ. And I can't take the wraps off of it yet. It's too hush-hush, but we'll talk about it later down the line when I can. Probably within 30 days, I'll know if I can talk about it or not. So I want you in on the ground level. Now, let me say this, though. And Jay, since you're the newest in the group, I'll reiterate this especially again. When a family allows you to come in their living room and apprentice there and learn, the one thing they expect is confidentiality. We cannot talk about to anybody the things that we talk about ourselves here in this ministry because the devil would love to harm the work. And we as a staff are opening up everything. There's nothing hidden from y'all. You see everything that's happening, good and bad, weak and strong, and you're to learn from the weaknesses as well as the strengths because not everything around here is perfect. Never will be. It's like juggling. You'll always have one ball down on the ground, you know, picking it up, trying to get it in the air again. So we're letting you be in on everything, but we're expecting the maturity and responsibility on each person's part to talk inward and not outward. To share inward but not outward in terms of things that are in the planning stages, things we're not sure of. For instance, let me take the radio program. I would not want y'all to go out and say we're thinking about doing a radio program. Until we have decided we're going to do a radio program, or I don't want anybody to talk about it. Because people will gain the idea that there is instability, that you're constantly talking about things but not doing them. And it's a bad thing for an organization for that to happen. That is not the case. Now, we are weighing it. It's already been 3 months of work done on it. There'll probably be another 3 before we're sure. But if we don't do it, it would be better that it had never been mentioned. If we do it, when you do go out, you'll know what to say, and you'll know why we're doing it, how it's going to be done, and just share it to the rooftops because we want cities and churches all over to get involved. But don't talk about things until you're told to. Okay? Well, our time's gone for this morning's meeting, so we'll draw this first session to a close. And I really believe, I'm so excited about this semester. I think we're in for a fantastic time. We are praying for, and it's going to take, God's going to have to provide the finances as well as the person at the same time. But we're praying for a person to take over this responsibility and head it up that Dale's been talking about in the shipping room. And we'll use Dale in other ways, and y'all will spend less time back there yourselves. You'll spend some time, but it'll be less time under the direction of whoever we bring in. So that's a prayer request. And we're advertising for that person right now, and I think a good many resumes have come in. That's what I understand. But we'll close in prayer now. Lord Jesus, what an excitement, what a contagious spirit there is about just getting together in your word and talking about the future. How we desire that consistently we might commit our plans unto thee, and that we might know that you are the one establishing them for your kingdom's sake.